Hi, and welcome to the Animal Training Academy podcast show, the show for animal training and behavior nerds, where I, Ryan Cartledge, interview the world's most proficient animal training and behavior geeks. We're absolutely thrilled and grateful to have you here with us today. So make sure you hit that subscribe button on whatever you're listening to this on so that you don't miss a single episode. Each episode of this show is brought to you on behalf of the ATA membership. And if you like the conversations in this episode, then you're invited to continue them with like-minded behavior nerds within the membership area, which you can find out more about at www.animaltrainingacademy.com. Once part of the ATA tribe, you'll get access to twice monthly live web classes, the back catalogue of previous web class replays, plus a huge library of videos and projects to help problem solve your training challenges. Plus, we're a sociable bunch with an exclusive private Facebook group and forum areas. It's like a Netflix social media platform for animal behavior geeks. We will get started on today's episode where we will be talking to one Lily Chin. Lily is an illustrator best known as the founder of Doggy Drawings, where she provides custom illustration, infographics, and a catalogue of art products for sale. Lily's infographics featuring dog body language have become a popular tool for dog training professionals, veterinarians, behaviorists, and welfare groups who advocate for humane animal training methods. A partial list of prominent behavior consultants and organizations that have used her dog art include the late Dr. Sophia Yin, Fair Free Pets, Family Paws, RSPCA, SPCA LA Police Training Program, the World Health Organization for Rabies Awareness Campaign, Four Paws International, and the IAABC. Her free posters have been translated into many different languages and are used by educators, rescues, and shelters around the world. Lily Chin's first illustrated gift book, Doggy Language, A Dog Lover's Guide to Understanding Your Best Friend, will be published by Summersdale in October 2020. So without further ado, it's my very great pleasure to welcome Lily Chin to the ATA podcast show today. She's patiently waiting by in California. Lily, thank you so much for taking the time to come and hang out with us at Animal Training Academy today.
Hi, Ryan. Thank you for inviting me. It's good to be here.
I'm really excited about this episode, everyone, and to share Lily's work with you all. Lily and I have spent hours chatting on Zoom over the last few weeks.
What else is there to do?
And so this podcast has been hours of preparation in the making, but Lily's work is really important and we're going to talk about it today. But let's dive into the first question today, Lily. Can you take everyone listening back and share where you first learned about and got started with positive reinforcement animal training? And we love stories, so any stories you want to share, we will be very excited to listen.
Okay. So first of all, I want to clarify that I'm not a dog trainer. I'm not a professional animal trainer in any way, but I became interested in animal training because of my own personal experience with my own dog, Boogie. He's a Boston Terrier. I rescued him when he was about 3 years old. The way it all started was when I first adopted him. About a year after I adopted him, it might have been less than a year. He bit somebody. He bit my building manager in the apartment that I'm living in. And I was issued a notice of either moving out, getting evicted, or getting rid of my dog. And, you know, I was devastated and panicking and I didn't know what to do. I didn't know anything about animal behavior at the time other than what I'd seen on TV with the Dog Whisperer show. So that was the limit of my knowledge. And I thought that that was what training was supposed to be like. I made lots of phone calls. I looked for a trainer on Google. I rang the first person who showed up on Google and they turned out to be someone who used aversive methods. But of course, at the time, I didn't realize that this is not what training is. I thought this is how it's done. You use a prong collar, you correct your dog, you show them who's boss. I thought that was how it was done, even though I was really uncomfortable with it. What got me onto positive reinforcement animal training was because my dog got worse. He didn't get better. He became more aggressive. He became more scared of people. And I wrote into an internet column at the time on dogster.com, and Grisha Stewart was answering questions from the public about dog behavior. And I wrote to her and I said, hi, you know, I have this dog. He's, you know, I'm taking him to a boot camp and they've got a prong collar on him and he's learning how to be obedient and he's doing fine, but I don't understand how to make him like people. And Grisha said to me, well, first of all, you want to get rid of that prong collar and look into something called CAT, or developing behavior adjustment training. At the time, BAT was new. So she referred me to all these links. I got onto this Yahoo group, which doesn't exist anymore. I don't know if people still use Yahoo groups, but at the time there was a functional rewards Yahoo group. And that's where I met trainers like Irit Bloom and Sarah Owings. So I would read these discussions on the forum between Karen Pryor trainers. And I reached out to them. And Sarah, I had a chat with Sarah, and you know, I was recommended all these books, like, you know, read this book, a Karen Pryor book. And the more I read, and the more I, and these are books as well as internet forums, the more I sort of realized that there's more to training than what I've seen on TV. There is a whole world of animal behavior knowledge to learn. So I bought a clicker, I got some food, I tried to teach my dog loose leash walking, and I saw him come to life. Like, I saw a completely different dog. Boogie was just so happy, he was so perky, he was so, and that was when I told our trainer, I pretty much stopped taking those classes with the aversive trainer and switched over to a positive reinforcement trainer and started learning more about it. So that was the incident that prompted me to learn more. And I learned about dog body language, and I realized that this was information that wasn't on TV. Nobody talked about it. And it just baffled me that there was so much that the general public doesn't know about. So, you know, it became an obsession to me to put it all on paper, to illustrate it. And I put a lot of my drawings into a blog into blog posts that I had for Boogie, my dog. He had his own blog. And that was how I connected with a lot of positive reinforcement animal trainers, because they saw this blog post. And that was also how Grisha contacted me to illustrate her book. And that pretty much started a career of illustrating for trainers.
There's some pretty big ripples. I feel like if you're on a, I mean, Grisha was responding to you then and by sending you some links.
Yes.
Like those ripples have led into the work that you're doing today, and they are spread around the world and influencing. Like you said in your bio there, I read you have some illustrations for the World Health Organization for a rabies awareness campaign.
Well, that came a bit later. That happened maybe a few years after I'd already started illustrating dog body language stuff for trainers. Like, I mean, I contacted Dr. Sophia Yin because I saw her blog post about dominance, how that wasn't a thing, and that was all the controversy around that. And I was reading her blog post, and I contacted Sophia and asked if she was interested in an illustrator. And she hired me, and I started doing her illustrations. So I already had lots of images on the internet showing dog body language. And the World Health Organization contacted me. They were doing a rabies awareness campaign, and it was a social media campaign for their website. And they wanted to show that the way to prevent rabies is to prevent dog bites. And the way to prevent dog bites is to learn dog body language and to know what your dog is feeling. So they reached out to me to see if they could use some of the illustrations that I had done. So that was how the World Health Organization thing happened.
And where did those posters get shared? Just on social media?
It was mostly social media. It was my website. And I mean, this was when Facebook was still not that popular. I mean, this is going back many years, but you know, the work still gets shared today. It's still viral. Like doggy, for example, my Boogie doggy language poster, that one gets a lot of views.
There was a time when Facebook wasn't popular. No, just joking. So I mean, what I think your story illustrates to me is that we just don't know who we're talking to when we're assisting people, and where a bit of kindness and generosity might lead to. As Grisha Stewart would have gone, I don't know who Lily Jen is, but let me send her some links. So shout out to Grisha for those amazing reports. Yeah. Tell us about Boogie. So Boogie, I feel like lots of people know Boogie because you post about him frequently on social media. He's part of your illustrations.
Yeah.
Where did the name Boogie come from?
Well, it's just that before him I had fostered two dogs. One was Jazzy and one was Rocky. They were both Boston Terriers for Boston Buddies Rescue. And they had kind of musical names like Jazz and Rock. So I just thought I'd stick with the musical theme. And that's how Boogie came about. But he's 15 now. He's old. He's deaf. He's going blind. He may have a brain tumor. We're not sure. But when I first adopted him, he was a puppy. He was very lively, very smart, very cute. But he had a problem with people and other dogs. More people than other dogs. He would lunge at people. So, and he had bitten people before. So that was my main problem. So I had to learn a lot about reactivity and aggression and how to manage that, and also understand that, you know, there's nothing wrong with him. He's not an aggressive dog. It is something in the environment that is triggering this and that he's responding to. So that was a big lesson for me.
And you said that it became an obsession to take what you were learning with Boogie, and you had your blog going at the time, and to get it onto paper. I'm curious to learn, before you started to illustrate dog body language, you were doing illustration before that, right? Did you have a similar obsession before this to like kind of create social change through drawing?
I didn't think of it as creating social change through drawing, but before I got into drawing dogs and before I started drawing about dog behavior, I was actually just doing pet portraits. People would pay me to draw their dog or their cat. And before I did that, I was working in animation. So it's interesting to look back at it now, because it feels like a really long time ago, like in another lifetime. But I used to work in 2D animation. I had a small company with my partner, Eddie, and we made... We co-created a show for Warner Brothers Animation. It was called Mucha Lucha. I don't know if you've heard of it. It was in the early 2000s. It was on Kids WB Network, and it was also shown on Cartoon Network. We made 52 episodes, and Mucha Lucha was about Mexican masked wrestling. It's about a culture called Lucha Libre. And at the time, when we first pitched it to Warner Brothers in Hollywood, nobody had heard of Lucha Libre. Nobody knew what it was. It was very, I mean, now we know what masked wrestling is, right? Like, people have seen it on the internet. There are movies, there are events. People know what it is. But back then, we're talking like the late 1990s, early 2000s, nobody knew what it was. People had heard of American wrestling, like WWE, but nobody knew what Mexican masked wrestling was. So we had to explain all this stuff, explain an entire culture and sport to people who were going to buy this show from us. And so in a strange sort of way, I feel like I'm doing the same thing right now with behavior. Like, I'm taking a body of knowledge, a culture, a world of information, and I am attempting to explain it with visuals to make it make something that is less, not that well known in the general public, to make it more accessible, to make it more well known, to use a word that someone said, to normalize it, to, you know, take something obscure or challenging and make it easier for people to understand. So I guess the wrestling thing wasn't really about social change, but it does feel like translating something, a cultural phenomenon or knowledge, and translating it to a format that's more accessible and that's easier to take in. Does that make sense?
It does. And so I used the word social change before, and you kind of suggested you don't see it as creating social change through illustration. but were you obsessed with spreading masked Mexican wrestling?
I was obsessed. Yeah. So I was obsessed with it back in the 2000s. I mean, I did blog posts. I did a website. I was drawing a lot of masked wrestlers. We made an animated series about it. So yeah, well, I mean, this was back in the day before the internet was normal. I mean, the internet was still kind of new. I mean, I'm that old. We were like ordering videotapes of wrestling from the USA to Australia, where I used to live, because we couldn't get that stuff in Australia. So,
and what do you think drives, and bring it forward now to like that? I'm going to assume the same. There's some similar motivators or drives behind the obsession to spread information about Mexican mask wrestling and dog body language, positive reinforcement. What do you think drives that obsession? Like, is that something you can answer? Like, do you even know? Have you even thought about that?
You know, it's really funny because, like, linking the two things, this is the first time I've done that on this podcast interview. It just came out like that. I think it's because I guess it's because I feel more confident drawing than I do as a speaker or a performer or what's the best way to put this? Like, I guess a lot of dog trainers, a lot of animal trainers, they very confidently speak about behavior or solve problems in person or have webinars or do interviews or you know, have lessons where they talk about what they do. I guess that's not my medium. I'm not somebody who can just stand on the stage or, you know, communicate this. I feel more fluent putting it down in visuals. So that's how I think that might be the answer.
Yeah, and we're very grateful for that. And I think when you talk about all of the dog trainers being confident, all of the people listening to the show right now who suffer from imposter syndrome are like, really? People confidently do this?
they look confident to me.
Well, so then do you draw a new diagram or infographic? I'm not sure what your industry terminology is. And then put it out there and being like, yeah, yo, I'm the awesomest person ever. This is going to be great. Or are you like trepidation? Like, you're like, oh my God, are people going to like this?
Well, I don't do everything on my own. I'm always consulting with people who know more than I do. I would never just do something and just put it out there without first checking with experts. So I collaborate with experts. I get feedback from experts and I get, you know, I'm open to corrections and changes. And when the people I consult are happy with it, then I put it out there. So, I mean, a lot of the work I do are for clients who actually tell me what to draw. They give me the information they want to convey to the public and I do the illustrations to go with what they want to say. And even with my own stuff that I do, with infographics that I do, I'm always collaborating with someone, so I'm not alone in doing this.
I love that. And the other component of your story, one thing you said there is you reached out to Dr. Sophia Yin and you asked her if she wanted someone to illustrate some of the things she was writing about. Some might label that as quite bold to kind of...
Yeah, I was actually really nervous because I generally don't just reach out to someone cold. So she was the first person I reached out to cold. I had seen an article she'd written and I emailed her and said, hi, you know, by that time I was already illustrating some stuff for Grisha Stewart. So I said, I'm doing some work for Grisha Stewart. I really love what you're doing. Do you need an illustrator? I'd be happy to do some work for you. And the first thing she did was, hey, here are my dogs. Can you draw my dogs? So I drew her dogs. And then we did a video. We did the animated video on fear, stress signals in dogs. And then after that, she just gave me a lot of work, which was really good.
And I get the feeling from your story, and it came from you sharing how you reached out to Dr. Sophia Yin, and I appreciate that, you know, that was, as you mentioned, contacting someone cold. But yeah, having had you've been an ATA member for, I don't know, a year now, maybe a little bit longer, I'm not sure.
Might be, yeah.
But we've had this opportunity to connect via Zoom for, if we added up all the time, a couple of hours before this podcast, like I said earlier. And I've really enjoyed those calls, and you've given me lots of ideas, and you've shared people's names that I'm now like looking at their work, and so we've had ripples from those calls. And it struck me that when you mentioned that you reached out to Dr. Sophia Yin, that part of your being, part of your mode of operation, is curiosity. Would you say that's accurate? Would you use that label to describe yourself?
It was curiosity, and it was also excitement that she had written all this stuff about dominance being, I mean, it was, she had written an article, it was an entire web page basically debunking everything that was on the Dog Whisperer show. And I hadn't seen anybody else do this. She was like the first person who had written about, you know, what dominance is and isn't. So I was really excited to find that, and I wanted to be a part of, you know, I wanted to help.
I like that. Curiosity. I'm gonna use that label for you anyway, even if that's potentially not the one that you would use. curiosity, obsessiveness. And I like that I like your answer to that other question as well, that you don't kind of just put stuff out there, that you ask people who are potentially more knowledgeable than you in certain areas.
Yeah.
So some really cool takeaways from your story there. Thanks for sharing all of that, Lily. Before we move on to the next part of this episode, can you just bring everyone up to speed and where they can go now to find out more information about you, what you do, and access some of your work?
So my website is doggiedrawings.net. That is D-O-G-G-I-E, drawings.net. And I have basically you can find everything I do on my website, from pet portraits to infographics, examples of infographics that I've done for my clients, also posters that I've created in collaboration with experts that are free to download and print. And there's also examples of other stuff I'm working on. Like, for example, I've got a book coming out later this year, so there's reference to that as well. And I have an online shop where I sell prints and enamel pins that I've designed and gift products, and that sustains me. I mean, the online shop where I sell stuff is a big part of my income. So that's a big part of what I do as well.
And people can pre-order the book now, is that correct?
You can pre-order it on Amazon, but it's not out till October. So as we get closer to October, it's going to be available in more places, in more online places. Like if you go to bookshop.org, I think that's a fairly new website that lets you locate the independent bookstores where you can buy this. I know it's going to be available in New Zealand at Mighty Ape. Does that ring a bell? It's a website. Amazon around the world as well.
And you can contact you through that website and get you to convince you to work on any project. Am I correct that you've got dogs on duvet covers? On Duna? I don't know what you call them.
Yeah. So blankets. Yeah. So there's a company called Berkshire Blankets in Massachusetts. They've licensed a lot of my artwork, like dogs and cats that they're selling on blankets. And you can buy those in home goods stores in the US. And I get a royalty. I get a very tiny royalty every time someone buys a blanket. So please feel free to go ahead and buy some blankets.
And are you like subtly like educating people about dog body language through blankets?
Well, they did license that poster to put it on blankets. I mean, it wasn't my idea, but, you know, they like it and it's popular. So there is dog body language and cat body language stuff that you can buy on blankets.
It is awesome. Hey, thanks so much for sharing everything so far, Lily. We love hearing about people's behavioral odysseys, as we like to call them.
Yeah. Okay.
Moving forward, though, I wanted to talk more about the work you do. Now, one reason I was super keen to get you on the podcast show follows on from conversations, as I've mentioned already, you and I had last month when we caught up for a Zoom chat. And for those listening that are not part of the Animal Training Academy paid membership, and just to fill you in, I offered all ATA members a complimentary one-on-one call with myself last month. So me and Lily connected for one of those. And by the time Lily and I had connected, I'd done close to 50 of these with ATA members. in an attempt to just connect with everyone during the global pandemic and make sure our members were doing okay. And one recurring theme that I found members were wanting to talk about was how to process both their feelings and thoughts when they saw others using aversive techniques. And to build on that, how do we become effective at communicating in these contexts when we find ourselves face-to-face with someone using a choke chain, for example? Additionally, and not long before Lily and I caught up, I had recorded a podcast episode with the International Association of Animal Behaviour Consultants, the IAABC's, Executive Director Margie Alonzo. And in that episode, it came up in our discussion the possibility that some people potentially view people that use positive reinforcement and people who don't as us and them. And Margie and I talked about the value of building our skills at being effective and inclusive of all learners. And if you haven't listened to that episode yet, you can find it on the ATA website under the podcast tab. Now, all of this has been swirling around in my mind for the past few months, and I have become increasingly interested in creating content to give people the resources, tools, and ideas to keep this conversation going. How can we be effective and inclusive, and how can we spread positive reinforcement ripples out into our wider communities? And so when talking with you last month, Lily, I realized the work you are doing, as we've already talked about, is one of these tools. I remember just before I got on the call with you, in fact, I saw a post in my news feed on Facebook from a local positive reinforcement dog training group that had just been set up. And when I say local, I mean here in New Zealand and specifically for my region within our city. So really local. And the post was about the group rules. And to help members understand this was one of your posters, Lily.
Oh, wow. That's great.
Your ripples and the work you're doing have reached my tiny little corner of the world here in New Zealand. Your work and its ripples are, for me, a perfect example of the type of tool I want to use Animal Training Academy to help people find and access. Now, you told me when we caught up last week that one thing you want to do is make training jargon and concepts more accessible.
Yes.
And I think you're doing a bloody good job of it.
Well, so, I haven't really started yet.
Oh, my God. I mean, that's amazing. But why is this so important to you?
A lot of, as you know, like in Animal Training Academy, all the webinars and all the podcasts that you host, you're talking to experts on animal behavior. And there's a lot of concepts in behavior analysis that we talk about quite, you know, casually, because everyone understands what we mean by positive reinforcement and, you know, terms like negative punishment, positive punishment, extinction. I mean, we know what these terms mean, but the general public doesn't know what these terms mean. And they're not intuitive terms. Like, you don't, they're kind of very tricky and challenging. Like, you know, the positive negative thing, for instance, even the difference between positive and negative reinforcement, it takes doing LLA to fully understand what all this stuff means. And I've done LLA with Dr. Susan Friedman, which is mind-blowing. That taught me so much. I've also done like an IAABC course with Erica Fjorbacher, and which was like an introduction to the principles of behavior analysis. And that really helped me understand things a lot clearer. And right now I'm doing another audio course on the Equiosity Show with Alexandra Curlin and Mary Hunter and Dominic Day. And I'm learning about all the same material again. It's the same terminology. And the more I listen to these things, I realize that I really can't talk about this stuff with most people. Like, I can only discuss this with my group of friends who are animal trainers, who are behavior experts, but it's not normal to talk like this. So my goal is to make this language more accessible, to demystify the jargon, to explain it. And I'm going to do this the only way I know how to do it, and that is by illustrated examples and to use images and to make it cute and to make it exciting and to make it interesting visually. So that's my goal. That's what I'd like to do.
So you actually have it in your mind when you're creating a piece of art that you want to make it cute.
Yes.
Because I'm going to ABA, you're reinforced for doing the behavior of creating something that you would label as cute, you've found that, that cuteness factor is something that's helped you bridge the gap with people? Or is it something that you're doing consciously, or is it subconscious?
Yeah, I'm doing it consciously because I know that it sells. People tell me they like it when something is cute. Like, people share it when it's cute. Like, I mean, photographs of, there are lots of, I mean, there are books out there about animal body language, dog body language. There are webinars, there are videos, and they're all photos of real live animals. But when I draw an animal and it's cute, it will get shared a lot more. And also, there was something else. I tried to explain these concepts to my partner, Nathan. He's not an animal person. He's not even a dog person. He likes my dog, but he was never a dog person. When I use the jargon words with him, I mean, when I talk about positive reinforcement, negative reinforcement, punishment, etc., he just glazes over and he doesn't know what I'm talking about. So I realized that I'm not very good at talking about this stuff. But when I showed him images, when I draw this stuff, when I show him drawings that I've done, infographics, explaining the same concepts, I could see that, you know, he looked at them and said, oh, yeah, I see what you mean. Oh, yeah, I get that. I get it. So from that experience, I know that, you know, visuals can make a difference. I mean, I can't speak for everybody else. This is just my boyfriend.
and I know others are doing art,
yeah,
in relation to animals and behavior related tools that we use to work with our animals. Maybe those people lack Lily Chin's obsession or curiosity, but there's something sticky. I'm gonna use the word sticky, and tell me if that resonates with you, or you might choose a different word. There's something sticky about your drawings. Do you think it's because, and once again, the example that I shared of the fact that my local group that just started here in Wellington, Kapiti Coast, Wellington City, New Zealand, is sharing your art as part of the group rules. I don't even know if they know that they're sharing your art, or they just found something and they're sharing it. But, you know, that is operationalized what sticky means. Like, it's everywhere. I see it everywhere. Do you think it's the cuteness that makes it stickiness, or are there other components that you intentionally include in your artwork that have made it so well received?
That's an interesting question. I'm not really sure how to answer it because I don't know why it's shared so often. But I do know that, I mean, there are lots of illustrations that become memes on the internet. There are lots of other things that get shared that may not have the same, that may not be the same content at all. I mean, people can do infographics about anything, really. I mean, it could be all, it might not even be true and it gets shared, you know? So I don't know. But as far as I know, there isn't anybody else doing what I'm doing. So maybe that's a factor. Like, there hasn't been any, nobody's done dog body language illustrations that I'm aware of.
When we caught up, I feel like I remember you saying to me as well that one thing that you try to incorporate into the cuteness and the art is simplicity. Have I remembered that correctly?
Yes. Yeah.
Why has simplicity been an important component for you?
Because I want to make it easier for people to see what I'm communicating in the drawing. If I made the drawings too realistic, and I could be completely wrong, I mean, but I'm just thinking, if it's too realistic, then you may as well use a photo. And if you're going to use a photo, then you don't need a drawing. And I have been told, this is what someone has told me, or a few people have told me, is that when you look at photos, there's a lot more sensory information to take in. If you're trying to understand what an animal is expressing in a photo, you know, you have to know what to look for. So I'm just making that process easier. If I draw it in a simple way and I point out what to look for, then, you know, hopefully people can see something a lot quicker. Does that make sense?
Well, I hope so. I'd like to draw some comparisons, or maybe a better way of saying it would be to offer some suggestions for those of us who putting my hand up here, for those of us who aren't skilled in the art of making something that I draw make sense to anyone else other than myself. I'm not very good at Pictionary. What is your message to people who feel like they're struggling to get this message across? Do you feel like we can take some of the concepts you've talked about, cuteness, simplicity, mm-hmm. and incorporate it into our work in trying to educate people about positive reinforcement? And
I hope so. That's what I'd like to do, to explain behavior concepts through simple drawings and sayings and, to take scientific words and just say them in, explain them in everyday speech. And hope, as I was saying earlier, like if something is simple and cute, it's going to have a lot more mileage as far as getting shared on the internet.
So I don't have data here, but I feel like there are a lot of frustrated people. When I say a lot, I feel like some people potentially might be frustrated because they're struggling to get their message across. There's particular parties they want to talk to, or just in their general, they come across someone on a walk and they see them pulling their dog or yanking their dog, and they're struggling to get their message across. Do you have any other message that you want to share with animal trainers specifically, dog trainers, zoo animal trainers, veterinarians, about how they can get their message across effectively?
I offer services as an illustrator. So if there's anything that any, veterinarians, behaviorists, trainers want to communicate, they can get in touch with me and I will be happy to illustrate anything to help that process.
Beautiful.
And like I said, yeah, I mean, I'm open to collaborating, so.
And so some of the work you've done has been really widely shared, especially I think some of your early work on just your poster about the dog body language.
Mm-hmm.
Can you share your experiences around creating that poster and putting it out there in the world, and how that all got started and how that all was received?
Okay. So this is going back over 10 years ago. I think it was Sarah Owings who introduced me to Turit Rugas' book and DVD on talking terms with dogs. Turit Rugas calls them calming signals, but they're also, I know they've been called other things like distance increasing, distance reducing, appeasement signals, stress signals. So when I first learned about these signals, that was when I started noticing them in Boogie, my own dog. Prior to being aware that these things existed, I didn't even know that he was showing any signs of stress because I didn't know what to look for. And I didn't know that lip licking or yawning, blinking, I didn't know these things meant anything. So at the time, like I said, this is going back over 10 years, I was amazed that this stuff wasn't on TV. It wasn't on the, any celebrity dog trainer TV shows. It wasn't anywhere. I mean, you couldn't find any information about this stuff unless if you bought very academic books with black and white photos in them. So I was working on illustrations for Grisha Stewart at that time for Bat. And so we were looking at, and also for Dr. Sophia Yen as well. I was doing charts for her on body language. So I realized that, I would love for more people to know about body language, how to see if your dog is happy or sad or anxious or, So I created this chart of my dog starring my dog Boogie because I see him all the time and he's really easy to draw. And I put it on the internet and it became viral. So that's how that started. And then from then on, I just got approached by a lot of people wanting dog body language charts, but with their own dog or a different dog. And the exciting thing is that in more recent years, I've also done a cat body language chart. And I did that with Oregon Humane Society. Like I said, I don't work alone. I always consult or collaborate with an expert. And more recently, I did a cockatoo body language chart with Lara Joseph of the Animal Behavior Center. And that was all Lara, really. She sent me tons of photos and videos and wrote everything. I just did the drawings of the cockatoos. And it's really interesting for me as well because I'm learning things. I've never had anything to do with cockatoos. So, this is stuff I wouldn't know. So, I'm learning and sharing at the same time. And I think there's been talk of, rabbit body language and mouse body language charts. Those are in the works too.
Awesome. And so that you said it went viral. Has that been and that was one of your first forays into sharing stuff on social media?
Yeah. It was early days of social media and it got shared a lot.
Is that poster, would you say, one of your most popular pieces of wood?
Yes. I offer it as a free download, but people still buy it. So I think that's amazing that it's something I offer for free, but it also gets bought, like people buy the printout. It's also a poster that has been ripped off a lot. There was a company, I don't know if you heard about this. I guess I'm not supposed to talk about it anymore, but there was a big national retailer that ripped it off and was selling it on t-shirts, and I had to, you know, we had a lawsuit to settle that.
That's a shame. And I wouldn't mind paying for the work. I mean, I want to make sure that we're supporting each other and supporting you and making sure that you can continue to do this. Now,
well, there's a book coming out, so
people will buy that. My nephews will be learning about body language of dogs for next Christmas, as well as my baby Summer. And recently, as in last year, I connected with Sarah Owings and Sarah Streaming, and we did a live class on filling our animals' emotional cups.
Yes.
And in preparation, and something that led up to that was a podcast on Sarah Streaming's Dog Cog Radio show with her and Sarah Owings. And also you collaborated with Sarah Owings and Sarah Streaming, I'm not 100% sure, on creating a poster about filling our dog's emotional cup. And that got shared everywhere. I remember when it came out. And also building up to this web class that we did for ATA members, I shared that poster. And it was one of the most popular shares I think I've done on social media.
Can
you tell us about creating your experience creating that specific piece of art?
So that one just happened very suddenly. There was a meme going around the internet called the emotional cup, but it was for humans, for babies, not for dogs, it's for children. And Sarah Owings had posted something on Facebook. She said, wouldn't it be great if we had one of these for dogs? And I just said in the Facebook comments of that post, I said, well, if you write something, I'll draw it. So she wrote something and I drew it. And it was really that simple. And, you know, so that was mostly Sarah. I mean, she did all that writing. I just added some images and turned it into a poster.
I feel like what your images did potentially, I own this isn't fact, but I feel like what they potentially do is people are sitting there with their mobile devices, their iPhones or their Android smartphones or whatever they've got, and their thumb is doing the behaviour of going up and down, up and down, up and down as they're scrolling their social media news feeds. And I feel like what your graphic does is create the behavior of still thumbs. So they'll see this image and it catches the eye and it gets them to stop scrolling.
Yeah.
And then they go forward and read the information. Is that something you've thought about before? Is that kind of, do you have that in mind when you create images?
Yeah, in my mind, I think that if there is enough to look at, if there's something, like I said, something that looks fun, that generates curiosity, then, you know, hopefully people will stop and read what's attached to the images. I know most people don't read, like they just look at pictures. But, you know, hopefully it's interesting enough that they will read it. I did another one recently called I don't know if you've seen it, it's called The Playway by Dr. Amy Cook. I attended a workshop in person in Pasadena at the beginning of this year where she talked about playing with your dog, like social play, not toy play, but actually getting on the floor and, you know, body language play with dogs. And I was so inspired by that. I did a poster about it. And so, you know, sometimes it just could be anything that inspires me and I get obsessed with it. And I think, oh, more people should know about this. So, yeah, that usually, you know, gets me going with creating stuff.
And you've also worked with Dr. Susan Friedman. You sent me a poster. And this is what I loved about getting ready for this podcast is you sent me a poster on zoo animals. And it said if we can train wild animals without force or punishment, we can train our domestic animals. And I love that you've got this work buried and I'm just like, oh, my God. It's like I feel like you're like the what to the dog training and animal training community, you're like what Banksy is to like street art. I'm like, I see a new piece of, do you know Banksy?
I don't know if I'm that sort of.
But there's a level of excitement when I got when I'm like, oh my God, a new piece of Lily Chin. can you talk us through that particular?
Okay. Well, that's actually not new. That was done like years ago. That came about when I first started seeing stuff done by zoo trainers. This is back when Ken Ramirez was at Shedd Aquarium, and I was reading blog posts by him. And I went to my first Clicker Expo in, I think it was San Francisco. I can't remember. It was years ago. And I listened to Kathy Sadeo talk about, you know, training walruses. And I watched a video by Karen Pryor about dolphins. And the more I learned about zoo animals being trained with positive reinforcement, I just thought, wow, this is so cool. And I watched a video by Ted Turner, you know, about how to train a whale to pee in a cup, and I thought that would make a really good poster. Like, more people should know about this. So that's how that poster came about. And I was on YouTube and I was reading and collecting examples, and I put it all together and I consulted with a few trainers. And the interesting thing about that poster was that Dr. Susan Friedman contacted me to buy some, and I hadn't heard of Dr. Friedman before then. So that was how we met. She saw that poster and she said she loved it, and she bought several copies. And then, you know, a couple of years ago, I did LLA for the first time, and I didn't even know what LLA was at the time. She asked, you know, she offered me as a gift to do her class, and, you know, I accepted, and that was amazing.
Well, that story makes me smile and makes me think about your ripples flowing out there and reaching some of the major thought leaders and influencers in our community. So that's pretty special. How do you feel thinking back now that happened?
I feel really lucky. Like, I mean, I feel like, you know, I'm really blessed that I know all these amazing people, that I'm able to collaborate with them and able to work with them and for them. So, yeah, I mean, I guess I feel very fortunate that I have a niche to be working in.
And the feeling's mutual. We feel fortunate that you are working in our niche. Hey, thank you so much for all of us, Lily. Sadly, we are now at the final question for this episode. And going back a little bit, when I said, I can't remember what I said, but you said that you're just getting started. So, I mean, I want to know what you mean by this. At the end of our podcast episodes, we always ask our guests to share what they would like to see happen over the next 5 to 10 years at the animal training world and whatever specific niche and area and contribution that they're making in the animal training world. So answer that question, but also when you say you haven't even got started yet, what do you mean?
I mean that a lot of the stuff I want to do is still inside my head, and I haven't actually put it down on paper yet, and I'm still working it out, and I'm still thinking about it, and I'm still reading and researching and watching videos and listening to your webinars and and following podcasts and learning. Like, you know, I'm absorbing information, and so I feel like there's a lot that I still haven't put out on paper yet that still needs to be created.
So then as a what would you label would you use to describe yourself? Do you introduce yourself to others and say I'm an artist?
Yeah, I'd say I'm an artist or an illustrator.
So you say you haven't got started yet, and we're like talking about the massive ripples that you've already created. What does a day look like for you as an artist doing this?
Well, my day is very varied. Like, I work from home, so I can pretty much do anything whenever, but my day is made up of working on commissioned art for people. It could be a poster or an infographic or some sort of design for an animal behavior professional. It could be drawing somebody's pets. I also, like I said, I have an online shop, so I'm selling prints and enamel pins. So I also pack orders and I ship them. And then, you know, in my spare time, I design new stuff to sell.
And all of these ideas that you've got in your mind, do you kind of create time to just sit down and just draw on a daily basis? Do you have like, I'm imagining like a factory, like a warehouse at your house of like boxes and boxes of like unpublished.
It's like I have all these sketchbooks that are just full of scribbles and notes and things. And I, on my iPad as well, I've got lots of documents. Like they just all need to come together. I don't quite know how they're all going to come together yet, but it's all like in separate areas that needs to be organized.
What's your creative process to get it organized?
That's a good question. That's a part that I need to do that I haven't done yet.
So do you just like sit on the couch at home and you've got, do you always have a scrapbook with you and you're kind of just
drawing
what you're thinking?
When I listen to webinars and podcasts and things like that, I have my iPad or I have a piece of paper and pencil and I take notes and I do little doodles. I draw things out as I hear them.
That's so cool. And so moving forward over the next 5 to 10 years, what is your vision for our community and with regards to the work you're doing, like what do you want to see happen?
Well, I would love for there to be more awareness of animal behavior, how behavior works, more awareness about animal body language. I feel like if people learn to understand what animals are feeling and saying, then that's like a really big first step in being able to communicate with animals as intelligent, sentient individuals. So I just want to be part of those ripples. I want to contribute something to those ripples that are going out from ATA and, you know, all this community in generating that knowledge and awareness.
And if you haven't even got started yet, I'm excited about what that looks like over the next 5 to 10 years. Hey, thanks again so much for sharing everything today, Lily. Just before we do officially wrap up, though, I know we've already mentioned this during the episode, but can you just remind everyone listening where they can go to find out more, get in touch?
Okay, my website is doggydrawings.net, doggydrawings.net. And from there, you can find links to everything else I do, like my online shop and my book, how to pre-order, and how to commission illustrations. Wonderful. And there are also free downloads.
Wonderful. And we will, of course, link to all of that in the show notes for this episode on the Animal Training Academy website. Hey, Lily, so thrilled that we got an opportunity to do this today. This has been so much fun from myself. And on behalf of everyone listening, we really appreciate you taking the time to come on the show today. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me.
We do, of course, really appreciate all of you tuning in today as well. And if you have enjoyed this episode and you were interested in carrying on the conversation about working with our animals in the most positive, funnest, choice-rich ways, then as mentioned at the start of this episode, the Animal Training Academy community is waiting for you. Head on over to www.animaltrainingacademy.com and click on the membership button in the main menu to learn more about what members are describing as the Netflix social media platform for behavior geeks. There's something there for absolutely everyone, and we're looking forward to having you join the tribe. That's it for this episode, though. We're going to wrap it up there. Thanks again so much, everyone, for listening. You'll hear from us again soon.